The case of the pocket diary found in the snow. Link to HINTR. Introduction to Joe Mueller. Joseph Mueller, Secret Service detective of the Imperial Austrian Police, is one of the great experts in his profession. In personality, he differs greatly from other famous detectives. He has neither the impressive authority of Sherlock Holmes, nor the keen brilliancy of Monsieur Lecoq. Mueller is a small, slight, plain-looking man, of indefinite age, and of much humbleness of mien. A naturally retiring, modest disposition, and two external causes are the reasons for Mueller's humbleness of manner, which is his chief characteristic. One cause is the fact that in early youth a miscarriage of justice gave him several years in prison, an experience which cast a stigma on his name and which made it impossible for him, for many years after, to obtain honest employment. But the world is richer, and safer, by Mueller's early misfortune. For it was this experience which threw him back on his own peculiar talents for a livelihood, and drove him into the police force. Had he been able to enter any other profession, his genius might have been stunted to a mere pastime, instead of being, as now, utilized for the public good. Then, the red tape and bureaucratic etiquette which attaches to every governmental department, puts the Secret Service men of the Imperial Police on a par with the lower ranks of the subordinates. Mueller's official rank is scarcely much higher than that of a policeman, although kings and counselors consult him and the police department realizes to the full what a treasure it has in him. But official red tape, and his early misfortune, prevent the giving of any higher official standing to even such a genius. Born and bred to such conditions, Mueller understands them, and his natural modesty of disposition asks for no outward honors, asks for nothing but an income sufficient for his simple needs, and for aid and opportunity to occupy himself in the way he most enjoys. Joseph Mueller's character is a strange mixture. The kindest-hearted man in the world, he is a human bloodhound when once the lure of the trail has caught him. He scarcely eats or sleeps when the chase is on, he does not seem to know human weakness nor fatigue, in spite of his frail body. Once put on a case, his mind delves and delves until it finds a clue, then something awakes within him, a spirit akin to that which holds the bloodhound nose to trail, and he will accomplish the apparently impossible. He will track down his victim when the entire machinery of a great police department seems helpless to discover anything. The high chiefs and commissioners grant a condescending permission when Mueller asks, "May I do this? Or may I handle this case this way?" Both parties knowing all the while that it is a farce, and that the department waits helpless until this humble little man saves its honor by solving some problem before which its intricate machinery has stood dazed and puzzled. This call of the trail is something that is stronger than anything else in Mueller's mentality, and now and then it brings him into conflict with the department. Or with his own better nature. Sometimes his unerring instinct discovers secrets in high places, secrets which the police department is bidden to hush up and leave untouched. Mueller is then taken off the case, and left idle for a while if he persists in his opinion as to the true facts. And at other times, Mueller's own warm heart gets him into trouble. He will track down his victim, driven by the power in his soul which is stronger than all volition, but when he has this victim in the net, he will sometimes discover him to be a much finer, better man than the other individual, whose wrong at this particular criminal's hand set in motion the machinery of justice. Several times that has happened to Mueller, and each time his heart got the better of his professional instincts, of his practical common sense, too, perhaps. At least as far as his own advancement was concerned, and he warned the victim, defeating his own work. This peculiarity of Mueller's character caused his undoing at last, his official undoing that is, and compelled his retirement from the force. But his advice is often sought unofficially by the department, and to those who know, Mueller's hand can be seen in the unraveling of many a famous case. The following stories are but a few of the many interesting cases that have come within the experience of this great detective. But they give a fair portrayal of Mueller's peculiar method of working, his looking on himself as merely an humble member of the department, and the comedy of his acting under official orders when the department is in reality following out his directions. The case of the pocket diary found in the snow. Chapter 1. The discovery in the snow. A quiet winter evening had sunk down upon the great city. The clock in the old clumsy church steeple of the factory district had not yet struck 8, when the side door of one of the large buildings opened and a man came out into the silent street. It was Ludwig Amster, one of the working men in the factory, starting on his homeward way. It was not a pleasant road, this street along the edge of the city. The town showed itself from its most disagreeable side here, with malodorous factories, rickety tenements, untidy open stretches and dumping grounds offensive both to eye and nostril. Even by day the street that Amster took was empty, by night it was absolutely quiet and dark as were the thoughts of the solitary man. He walked along, brooding over his troubles. Scarcely an hour before he had been discharged from the factory because of his refusal to submit to the injustice of his foreman. The yellow light of the few lanterns show nothing but high board walls and snow drifts, stone heaps, and now and then the remains of a neglected garden. Here and there a stunted tree or a wild shrub bent their twigs under the white burden which the winter had laid upon them. Ludwig Amster, who had walked this street for several of years, knew his path so well that he could take it blindfolded. The darkness did not worry him, but he walked somewhat more slowly than usual, for he knew that under the thin covering of fresh fallen snow there lay the ice of the night before. He walked carefully, watching for the slippery places. He had been walking about half an hour, perhaps, when he came to a cross street. Here he noticed the tracks of a wagon, the trace still quite fresh, as the slowly falling flakes did not yet cover it. The tracks led out towards the north, out onto the hilly, open fields. Amster was somewhat astonished. It was very seldom that a carriage came into this neighborhood, and yet these narrow wheel tracks could have been made only by an equipage of that character. The heavy trucks which passed these roads occasionally had much wider wheels. But Amster was to find still more to astonish him. In one corner near the crossroads stood a solitary lamppost. The light of the lamp fell sharply on the snow, on the wagon tracks, and on something else besides. Amster halted, bent down to look at it, and shook his head as if in doubt. A number of small pieces of glass gleamed up at him and between them, like tiny roses, red drops of blood shone on the white snow. All this was a few steps to one side of the wagon tracks. What can have happened here, here in this weird spot, where a cry for help would never be heard? Where there would be no one to bring help? So Amster asked himself, but his discovery gave him no answer. His curiosity was aroused, however, and he wished to know more. He followed up the tracks and saw that the drops of blood led further on, although there was no more glass. The drops could still be seen for a yard further, reaching out almost to the board fence that edged the sidewalk. Through the broken planks of this fence the rough bare twigs of a thorn bush stretched their brown fingers. On the upper side of the few scattered leaves there was snow, and blood. Amster's wide serious eyes soon found something else. Beside the bush there lay a tiny package. He lifted it up. It was a small, light, square package, wrapped in ordinary brown paper. Where the paper came together it was fastened by two little lumps of black bread, which were still moist. He turned the package over and shook his head again. On the other side was written, in pencil, the lettering uncertain, as if scribbled in great haste and in agitation, the sentence, "Please take this to the nearest police station." The words were like a cry for help, frozen onto the ugly paper. Amster shivered, he had a feeling that this was a matter of life and death. The wagon tracks in the lonely street, the broken pieces of glass and the drops of blood, showing that some occupant of the vehicle had broken the window, in the hope of escape, perhaps, or to throw out the package which should bring assistance. All these facts grouped themselves together in the brain of the intelligent working man to form some terrible tragedy where his assistance, if given at once, might be of great use. He had a warm heart besides, a heart that reached out to this unknown who was in distress, and who threw out the call for help which had fallen into his hands. He waited no longer to ponder over the matter, but started off at a full run for the nearest police station. He rushed into the room and told his story breathlessly. They took him into the next room, the office of the commissioner for the day. The official in charge, who had been engaged in earnest conversation with a small, frail-looking, middle-aged man, turned to Amster with a question as to what brought him there. "I found this package in the snow. Let me see it." Amster laid it on the table. The older man looked at it, and as the commissioner was about to open it, he handed him a paper knife with the words, "You had better cut it open, sir." "Why?" "It is best not to injure the seals that fasten a package." "Just as you say, Muller," answered the young commissioner, smiling. He was still very young to hold such an office, but then he was the son of a cabinet minister, and family connections had obtained this responsible position for him so soon. Kurt von Mehringen was his name, and he was a very good-looking young man, apparently a very good-natured young man also, for he took this advice from a subordinate with a most charming smile. He knew, however, that this quiet, pale-faced little man in the shabby clothes was greater than he, and that it was mere accident of birth that put him, Kurt von Mehringen, instead of Joseph Muller, in the position of superior. The young commissioner had had most careful advice from headquarters as to Muller, and he treated the Secret Service detective, who was one of the most expert and best-known men in the profession, with the greatest deference, for he knew that anything Muller might say could be only of value to him with his very slight knowledge of his business. He took the knife, therefore, and carefully cut open the paper, taking out a tiny little notebook, on the outer side of which a handsome monogram gleamed up at him in golden letters. "A woman made this package," said Mueller, who had been looking at the covering very carefully, "a blonde woman." The other two looked at him in astonishment. He showed them a single blonde hair which had been in one of the bread seals. "How I was murdered." Those were the words that Commissioner von Meyringen read aloud after he had hastily turned the first few pages of the notebook, and had come to a place where the writing was heavily underscored. The Commissioner and Amster were much astonished at these words, but the detective still gazed quietly at the seals of the wrapping. "This heading reads like insanity," said the Commissioner. Mueller shrugged his shoulders, then turned to Amster. "Where did you find the package?"
"In Garden Street."
"When?"
"About 20 minutes ago."
Amster gave a short and lucid account of his discovery. His intelligent face and well-chosen words showed that he had observation and the power to describe correctly what he had observed. His honest eyes inspired confidence.
"Where could they have been taking the woman?" asked the detective, more of himself than of the others.
The Commissioner searched hastily through the notebook for a signature, but without success. "Why do you think it is a woman? This writing looks more like a man's hand to me. The letters are so heavy and..."
"That is only because they are written with